Hi, I'm Becky Sims, and welcome to Behind the Future, the podcast from Aspiration Digital. We're here to unlock digital careers, one conversation at a time. On each episode, I'll be joined by a student co-host. We'll be interviewing amazing people from across the industry to learn about how they got started in their career and what it is that they do. Let's dive in to find out the secrets to their success. Well, that was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was.
I love her energy. She's got such a vibe about her,
yeah,
hasn't she?
Yeah.
What stood out the most from Coral's conversation?
I mean, I guess she was talking a lot about how there's a lot of pressure on the youth to know what you need to do. And she was giving us loads of advice, and that's what I thought that was quite cool.
Yeah. Do you feel less pressure now?
Yeah, a lot less pressure.
That's good. That's good. Well, let's let our audience feel some less pressure and dive into some fun with Coral.
Hi, I'm Coral, and I'm taking you behind the future.
Welcome to our latest episode of Behind the Future. And I am here with our fabulous co-host, Elliot. Elliot, tell us a bit about yourself.
I'm in year 12. I'm at MGGS and I'm studying media, business and product design.
Amazing. And I feel like a bit of maths in there as well.
Yeah, I do take core maths.
Oh, I love that. Love that. And we are joined today by the wonderful Coral. Coral, tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. So I am marketing director for a software brand called Insights. I've had 10 years of marketing and now I'm in the illustrious position of also being a marketing mentor. So my life is basically marketing now. So nothing, no much room for anything else.
I love it. Cool. So over to you, Elliot, with our first question.
So I just wanted to start off to get you talking. What's a common misconception you have with marketing?
So there's loads of misconceptions with marketing, but I think the biggie that I always find is that people think to be a marketer you have to be creative. Now, and I say this, like, I am really creative, but I've worked with so many marketers over the years, I think like over 50 now, and I would say straight down the middle, half are creative and half aren't. So the creative folk tend to sit in content, but in the digital stream you get so many more like logical folk and folk who've done like maths, for example, like you have school or college, and they tend to sit in like SEO or do like ads. So SEO, by the way, search engine optimization. But the more technical sides of marketing is open to everyone, so you don't necessarily have to just be creative. You can, anyone really can be in a marketing role. It's just finding the right part of it for you.
Love that. Yeah. What led you to marketing then?
So I kind of got in it by mistake.
Didn't most of us though?
Yeah, like that's it. And I think it was, I didn't know marketing was even a career. So I got into marketing because I was working as a wedding coordinator for like a old manor house in the middle of Hampshire. And we didn't have any budget for marketer and they needed someone to write things. And we did this, and this is so ridiculous, but we did this like murder mystery event. And someone, one of my old colleagues, put in the title, "There's been a murder. And it's been a mystery," in a newsletter. I saw it and I was like, I need to change this. This can't go out. So I changed it. And the next thing you know, I'm doing all the newsletters. And then they're like, oh, okay, we need a leaflet. So did the leaflet. And then it slowly but surely took on all the marketing stuff. And I was like, I don't want to focus on any of this wedding coordinating stuff. Like, I just want to do all this fun, creative part. And then got a job in marketing. And it's just kind of gone on from there. But it's been like the best thing ever. But I really just fell into it because I just found some marketing opportunity in my current role at the time and then was like, okay, no, actually this is what I want to be doing. So that's kind of really it.
I love that. Did you even know to call it marketing to begin with?
No, like someone said to me it was just writing. So that's like, for ages I was like, I just want to be a writer then. Like, I clearly, that's me. I'm whatever this writer job is. And then it wasn't until I spoke to a couple of other colleagues who were like, you do know that's like a proper job. That's a whole thing called marketing. And then once I got it, like the bug set in, and that was it. And you know, 10 years later, here I am.
Love it. Best kept secret.
Yeah, of course. I mean, as a marketing director, do you ever feel like overwhelmed? Because maybe your job role, I don't know, is that a thing?
Yeah, I think so. When you get to director level, part of your job is to just be overwhelmed.
It's written on the job description.
That's it. It's like your time will be spent fretting. But it's a good kind of overwhelm. I think that's one of the right key things to know about, like, marketing is all about cause effect and risk benefit. So you have to think long term, if I do X, will that turn into Y or Z? And then the risk and benefit is all about, like, okay, if I decide to spend £10,000 on this advert, or if I make a choice about this social media post, what's the benefit going to be?
Yeah.
And I think that's the sort of, that's where the overwhelm can come from, is like the decision making of like, is this going to go well? But I think that's one of the joys of marketing, is that even if it doesn't go well, it doesn't really matter. You always learn something. So in those moments of overwhelm, it's kind of like trust in your gut. And then that kind of gets you over it. And I think overwhelm is such a small part of my role. The rest of it is all exciting and challenge and sort of like trialing different things. So yeah, a little bit of overwhelm, but like it kind of comes with the territory.
Yeah. And I guess it's getting comfortable with sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and managing expectations of those around you, because you might be comfortable that, do you know, this may or may not work, but then if someone else was like pinning everything on it and then you're like, oh no, marketing is always a test.
That's it. Yeah. I think that's one of the overwhelming things, is like talking to other people in the company. So in marketing, everyone says like, everyone has an opinion on marketing, which they absolutely do. And that can be overwhelming. But as long as you've got like a good relationship with your sales team and your like designers and your customer care folk, everything will be much easier. So the overwhelm sorts of like fade away as you sort of strike up better relationships with the rest of your team. Because then when things do go wrong, they go, that's all right. We know, we trust you. It's all good.
I love it. Relationships and trust are so important, aren't they?
Massively. Yeah.
A big part of it. How did you get to being marketing director level? So we've kind of, I suppose, we've gone all the way back. You were, was wedding coordinator, first kind of job out of.
Yeah, fresh out of uni.
Amazing. And I guess that's quite a glamorous job that people think, oh, I want to go help people get married, get to plan their big day every day.
And I can tell you it's not. It's crazy. Like people think they have hard customers. I've worked in retail, worked in hospitality. You think you have hard customers there, become a wedding coordinator. Yeah. It's a different game.
Well, you've got the bridezillas, haven't you?
Yeah, that's it. And the mother of the bridezillas, didn't know they existed, but they're fun.
Wow. Okay. Okay. That's a big, I suppose, and that teaches you a lot about managing things, because I suppose for 100%. Them, it's their biggest day of their lives. It's not even that year. It's of their lives. Like as young women and men have thought about this from being kids, about what this day might look like. And you're like, it's another day. I'm planning 20 of these at once. Like,
And it's one of those things like, I'm a firm believer in marketing. Any job that you've had before has a transferable skill that you can take into it. So when I was a wedding coordinator, the number one job I had was people management, whether it was the bride, the groom, the mother-in-law, like who else came along. It's all about managing expectations, having clear and calm communication, knowing what to say, when to say it, and again, like when to take risks. Like some risks are, it is about to chuck it down. Do I suddenly, you know, spin round this room that's currently got set up for like a meeting, make it look beautiful enough for a wedding so they can still have their photos and not get drenched in the process? So it's all of that kind of transferable skills that you had as a wedding coordinator, that made it easier to get into marketing, because you've got all of those like elements of like those soft skills that you can build upon in your career.
And so you're doing that and you start doing the writing.
Yeah.
And at some point you realize that's marketing.
Yeah.
What comes next?
Okay, so I got a job in pharmaceuticals as a marketing assistant. And when I tell you, I was like the cat that got the cream. I was like, I'm finally marketing. Everything's going to be amazing. It's going to be super creative. And then I got there and it was like, we can't do anything creative because we're highly regulated. Everything creative that we had done, we've already paid for last year. So we're using it again this year. And your main job is to order sandwiches and coffees for big meetings and also just look at prescription forms. So it was really challenging. You think like you're going to get this illustrious, amazing career straight off the bat. And for me, it was mainly putting things into this like platform where it was like, is this regulated? Has someone pre-approved this? And it would be the poster that I just wanted to work on. I just wanted to work on the poster and do the creative side. So I did pharma for a year. And then my second role was when it all sort of exploded. So I worked for a German company who did a kitchen appliance called Thermomix.
Heard of it, actually? Yeah.
Not many people have heard of it, but I had the best time there. It was amazing. And I did really get to get on the tools then and get really creative. And that's when it all just sort of slotted into place. And I worked on digital and I did content and I did events. And it was this amazing, like, sort of crazy environment of, we have these really lofty targets and there's three of you in a team and we want you to achieve the equivalent of 10 people in a team. But it was amazing and I had so much fun doing it. And then my career sort of spiraled from there. But to get into marketing director, I think a lot of people, especially folk who I actually met at Aspiration Digital, were like, well, it's like you just climb the ladder. And it's not. It's so different. Like my job is like, starts off straight, then there's a big squiggly line in the middle, and then it starts straightening up again as I got to director. But it's really like knowing in marketing is that sometimes you have to sidestep and sometimes you might have to take a step back. But the journey to getting to like director level, CMO, wherever you want to be, is just so worth it in the end once you've done all of those missteps in between.
Yeah. Well, to be marketing director is really broad, isn't
yeah.
it? Because marketing covers so much and there's so many niche disciplines in there.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people look at the marketing career ladder instead of it being a ladder as a climbing frame, because literally are like, I need to find my way up here, but I'm going to go left now and now I'm going to go right. And did that year that didn't sound like particularly fun at the pharma company, did that give you something though that really helped you in the future?
Yeah. 100%. So I think working in pharma kind of like, it taught me so much just about being at work. So it was really strict. It was like you went in business wear every day. Now I work in tech and you can see now that I'm wearing dungarees. That would not have flown in the pharma company.
You've been sent home to absolute, change.
Yeah. That's it. You would not get through the door. But it taught me how to talk to customers. So we were talking to like some of the heads of Tesco and Asda and Boots. And it taught me how to interact with colleagues. And because we were a really small, tight-knit team, I got to work with the sales director, the marketing director, the brand director. And it kind of gave me this really amazing insight into how their brains work. And it's not so much sometimes the marketing element was interesting. It was the like strategic planning and the foresight and all of the bits of business that come across marketing's desk and how they dealt with it was so interesting. Yeah. And I think it set me up for everything else. Like there's lessons I had in pharma that I still apply today and tell my team about. So it, yeah, really, really sort of, it's the kind of like mold setting, I think, in that first year. And I think that's true of any marketing. I'm sure you've probably been the same. Like you probably think back to your first marketing job and go, oh yeah, there's things I did there. Like,
yeah.
Whether it be successes or mistakes that you remember later on that make you the marketer you are now.
Definitely. And I think working in something that's really regulated earlier on helps. Yeah. Because if you've not done that and then later down the line you get that, you're like, whoa, I feel so constrained. But if you've started constrained and then you get to open your wings, you're like, oh, okay, now I see the other side of it. But it's probably harder to have had your wings opened and then have them clicked all the way back and be like, oh, I can't do anything.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Anybody who complains to me now, I'm like, you've never worked in pharma. You have no idea.
Yeah, I think financial services and insurance and all of those are very similar, because I guess there's really and it's right that they are really strict because we need to be sure that people understand what they're buying and they're not being missold, etc. But yeah, for the marketing teams, that's like, oh, it stops some of the creativity. Yes, doesn't it?
Yeah, the clipping of wings, it's like, I just want to change this color slightly, and they're like, no.
Yeah.
Like, great, we'll put out the same one we've had for 3 years. Great.
Yeah. And you're like, do I have to have these three paragraphs of 0.8 text on here? Yes.
Yeah. That's it.
Okay. Because that doesn't look so nice. Yes,
you know, you just want to tell the designers and the printers just like chop it off when it gets into print.
Yeah. I've been there. Well, because I started in automotive marketing and a lot of the financial ads that we would put out, etc.
Yeah.
All of them would be anything where it was a loan or whatever comes with all of the rigmarole around it. So
yeah, 100%.
No, it's interesting. And I guess as a consumer, you probably don't think about that much.
No, probably not.
So but we have to do it because we have to protect our consumers.
Yeah.
But the consumer, most of the time, they don't read that text, do they? But it's there if they need to.
Yeah, it's that like hard and fast, isn't it? Of like, well, if you didn't read it and something went wrong, it's off our shoulders.
We did our bit.
Yeah, we did what we were told.
I love that.
Well, I mean, I'm 17, so I just have a quick question. So people who are like deciding to go to uni, apprenticeships, do you have any advice as to whether that was useful for you or not?
Well, I tell you what, what's your gut instinct at the moment? Are you thinking apprenticeship?
Oh, I honestly don't know.
No idea. And I feel for you, because when I was 17, I had this in my talk. I was very busy failing geography twice in the same year. Very stressful. So working in Sainsbury's and just like had no idea where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do, and just applied for universities. And it's because it just felt like the right place for me to be, because I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I had friends who were like, this is what I want. I want to be in finance, or I want to be in, you know, hospitality. And I was just like, I just want to write. Just want to be creative. And I had no idea where I wanted to go. So my gut was like, just follow what you love. I did really well in English at A-level, and I did really well in like media and things like that. So I was like, right, if I follow that path, I'll be okay. And then I saw there was this course, English Literature with Creative Writing. And I was like, wow, that's where I need to be. And I did it. And then still after uni, I still didn't really know what I wanted to do, but it got me on the path into marketing. And I'm a real firm believer, if you follow what you love, you'll get to the right place eventually. But that being said, some of the best marketers I know just said, uni's not for me, did an apprenticeship, and just completely eclipsed all of us uni folk because they had so much experience and work, yeah. and they had their foot in the door and they were having a great time. And I think if you know what you want to do and you know where you want to go, go for the apprenticeship. But if you're not sure, follow what you love and eventually you will probably find something that you really enjoyed for work.
That's good advice. Did you, from uni, I guess you also got the experience out of it.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's important as well. Some people just need that. They're like, I want to move out of home. Yeah. I want to go and live with other young people and cook pot noodles in the evening or whatever needs to happen.
That's it. And I think it's a real, like, I lived in like a small town outside of Reading and I didn't really like know life beyond that. And then I went on course, not uni. I was like, I want to do creative writing. This looks good. I went to Huddersfield University. I did not know where Huddersfield was on a map. I applied and off I went, packed the car up, not realising it was going to take 4 hours to get there. And then was like straight away was like so overwhelmed because there's all these new accents and nobody said like the, like, I don't know if you know any Northerners, they say to.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, just so out of my depth. But like a week in, I was like inaugurated as a Northerner and like just loved it, had the time of my life. Love and it was that. Great. But yeah, but it really is like what you need or want from your life and your gut will just take you on the right path. So I think I'd follow that if I were you.
Yeah. I think we always talk about you've got to love what you do. And and that starts with doing something you love that you know and then see where it can turn into.
Exactly.
But I guess also like today, you love marketing, but actually you're working in a software company, which probably software, when you were younger, you wouldn't have said software's my thing.
Like, yeah.
So how does that come together? Does that, and how does that feel? Because I think some people think, oh, I want to go into marketing and I want to market something I know, or I want to go and work in fashion because I love fashion. But actually the bit that you love is marketing.
Yeah.
So it almost doesn't matter what it is or...
100%. Yeah. I'm a real firm believer of like marketing success is what success is to you. So for me, I just want to work with brands that like have room to grow and they want to scale and they're willing to take risks. And Insights, who I work for now, just like basically just let me go off and innovate and do all of this crazy stuff. And it's so exciting because they're a small brand with massive ideas of growth. So for me, that's great because it's like I can just play around with different marketing tactics and I can do different designs and I can play around with social and this and that and the other. And that for me is what I enjoy. But I know other marketers who want to work for those big brands and they want to have on their CV that they've worked with like Volkswagen or they've worked for Gymshark. And that's completely valid as well. But I think for them, it's they have those industries or brands that they just love and want to be a part of. And it's completely horses for courses in marketing. But I think that's one of the joys for me is that as a marketer, you kind of pick a lane.
Yeah.
Like you can go, I want to work for startups or I want to work in software or I just want to be a marketer. Like whatever it is, you can kind of pick what you love. But yeah, for me, working in software, I've done it for a couple of years now and I really, really enjoy it purely because in software, there's so much room for experimentation and growth. And because it is quite new, fashion's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Software, like, you know, there's loads of new software startups every day. And you look at like San Francisco and, you know, the joke is that you can't move in a bar for someone that's got a software startup.
Yeah.
And there's so much potential there and there's so much sort of like untreaded path that you can, as a marketer, be the first to flow on. And I think that's really exciting. That's what really gets me out of bed. But I appreciate it's different for other marketers. But yeah, it's finding your passion in marketing.
Yeah. And I guess people will go through different things, won't they? Because you can't normally start your career at the pinnacle of where you want to get to. So, people will learn to love. Like I find it like running an agency, some of the clients we work for, some of the topics we have to create content for, you could go, well, that's quite boring and dry. But actually, the team really get into it because they understand the audience, they understand the client, they understand what they're trying to achieve. And it doesn't matter that they're not the target audience. experience. It's more putting themselves in the shoes of those people.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's just the challenge, isn't it? To like take something new. Like I find, so I've worked in agencies before and I'd highly recommend that to anyone. It's so much fun. But with agencies, you try something new every day. And even if it's brands that you're not really like, you wouldn't necessarily think of. Like you say, my favourite one is always insurance brands. Everyone's like, that's really boring. But if you get on the right project with the right people, it can be the most fun, like, sort of project of your career. And I think it's, as a marketer, being aware of like, maybe if that's something you enjoy, if challenge and change is your kind of thing, then maybe that's the type of marketer you want to be. Or it's horses for courses, but there's so much room in marketing for people.
Well, you think, you say insurance, but actually some of the most memorable TV ads of the last few years are like the meerkats from Compare the Market. You've got the big operatic guy from
Go Compare.
Of course it is. So like, you can still have fun with these brands as well, 100%. Can't you? And it's it's really interesting.
So I was going to ask, are you happy that you went into marketing, or do you wish you went down a different route?
Do you know what? There are some times, and I'm sure you would agree with me, Becky, in marketing where you're like, why have I chosen this career? Why am I doing this to myself? But no, actually, I like look back now, because there was one part in my life where I was like, maybe I should just be a yoga teacher. Maybe I'd be happier. But actually, now that I've got through some of the like tougher parts, because no career path is ever super easy, but actually now I'm sort of at this level, I look back with so much joy and I've had so many experiences. Like I have traveled the world with work and I've worked with some amazing people and had loads of PR opportunities and just done some really, really fun stuff. And I also love my job. You know, I'm at a level now where I get to be really creative and strategic and I get to experiment and I work with an amazing team. And I think that for me, all of those wins along the way, even though there's been hard times, definitely don't regret it. And I think if I had my time again, I'd probably do the same thing. Maybe skip out the wedding coordinator. Pretty much the same.
Although
route,
it sounds like you did learn a lot from the Bridezillas the mother of the Bridezillas. So you can't put a price on those bits.
Aspiration Digital is the one-day careers conference to help young people get started in the digital industry. We are just planning our next events and we are planning to move around the UK. So this is your opportunity. If you follow the link in the show notes, you can suggest that we come to your local area and get your school listed on the wait list. Follow the link now and pop your details in. We hope to see you at a future event.
Well, how has it been like in terms of like, I've heard you've been writing books. So how has that been for you?
Yeah. So one of the challenges in marketing is because you are creative at work, or at least I am, like I say, some marketers are more creative than others. It's really hard to like be creative at work and then be creative at home. So I finished my degree in 2014 because I'm ever so young. And I have probably started about 20 different books and finished none. But I'm kind of at a point now where I'm like, you know what? There'll come a Christmas where I'll just close the door for a couple of days, write a book and then just see what happens. But yeah, I think it's one of those things. It's like, if I've in my free time, if I can, that would be amazing. But it's just life and work get so busy that you just kind of lose track of it. And then they're trying to find a good idea as well. But
and would it be a marketing book or a story book?
Do you know what? I'd actually love to do both. Like I really love nonfiction and I love self-help. And I've read all of the biggies, like Start With Why and all of those kind of like blue sea thinking or red sea thinking. So I'd love to write something like that, but you always need to have something niche or like something different. So I'm going to find my genius idea soon. But then afterwards, probably do some nonfiction. And for ages, because I like did English at university, I was like, I need to do something like really highbrow and amazing. But actually, I'll probably write some like cheesy murder mystery thriller, something, you know, something you need to see at WH Smith's. That's my kind of goal now.
I'll be there for it. Yeah. Sign me up. Obviously, you mentioned now you're at marketing director level. You have a team around you. Yeah. So how do you find, because I suppose people always assume to go on in your career, you have to take on the management people, but that's also not always true.
100%.
But how do you find the management and leadership style, and what's that journey been like for you?
Do you know what, I think you've hit on a really interesting point there. So one of the things that I always say to, like, so I mentor junior marketers, one of the things I always say to them is, you need to decide if you are a functional manager or a people manager. A functional manager is maybe someone that runs a search engine optimization like pipeline of the marketing team, or they run the CRM, which is basically where you do newsletters and emails. And then if you're a people manager, you're someone who loves working with people. Absolutely fine to be both of those. I happen to be a people manager because I just cannot help myself. I love working in teams. I love seeing people like grow and thrive. And at this point, I'm sort of slightly emotionally blackmailing my team members to be like, when I'm very old and I just need a holiday budget, I'm encouraging you to remember me and employ me and just pay me once a week so I can have 2 weeks in Spain every year. But on a more serious note, like, growing teams is really challenging, or inheriting teams if you've come into a role is really tough. And my feeling on it is always you need to put that person first and decide what's working for them and make sure they're in the right sort of part of the business. So for example, my current team is just me and my marketing assistant, because I came into this team and just to basically, they have no marketing function, my current company. Came in and started that, and I'm slowly building a team. But my current marketing assistant, I mentored her once and was like, I need you to work with me, because if someone else takes you, I'll be fuming. Over the last year, I've been seeing her grow and seeing what she does. And that's the real fun part of managing people in a marketing role, is because there are so many opportunities for your team members, you can really see their strengths and weaknesses. And the weaknesses are just, you know, often, do you want to improve those parts, or are you just not interested? And if you're not interested, that is absolutely fine. But if you have your strengths and you really love them, you have this power as a marketing director or a marketing manager to push people into that career path. And it is one of the most like validating and rewarding experiences, seeing someone just go from, I don't know what a CRM is, to being this amazing content producer or this amazing digital manager, and just seeing their career thrive even after they've long stopped working for you.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. What do you see the differences between management and leadership?
Management, again, if you're looking at function, it's just making sure things get done at the right time. If you're looking at people management, it's making sure that of three things, really. One, are they getting their job done? Two, if they're not, what's stopping them? And is it a person? Is it things that are happening around them? And three, are they happy? And if they're not happy, why? That's one of the key parts of management. But then when it comes to leadership, you kind of lean on management a bit. So you're doing the function of managing, but you are almost like, you're like the mascot at like a football game. You know, when they're like coming and drum up the audience, that's you as a leader. You want to get people to follow your path. And if you're doing something completely mad or doing something that everyone is about to hate, so I've got a prime example of this. A couple of years ago, I was running an event and I had to really like come to the team cap in hand, because a small change for what felt like the sales team was a massive change for us. It meant not going back to bed at 9 o'clock like we were hoping. It was probably going to bed at like 1 a.m. and I had to go cap in hand and be like, look, team, this has been requested. And then you just see all these like sullen faces and just like the colour wash from everyone. And it's really easy in that position to just go, yeah, isn't it awful? Isn't it the worst? But as a leader, you're the mascot. So you've got to go, right, team, this is who's going to do this. And this is who's going to do this. And I'm going to muck in this way, because a good leader always leads from the front. And you go, right, this is the plan. And you lead that plan, and you are the first one through the door and the last one out. And to me, that is leadership summed up, of like, you take the team on the journey with you, but you have to lead it, and you have to be the inspiration and the emotion and the just general vibes that bring people together and help march them forwards.
Love that. Love that.
Yeah. I mean, being a leader is very hard, especially like when you've got some people who don't want to like, you know, follow what you're saying. So
yeah.
Do you have any like tips for the people who are listening?
100%. So yeah, sometimes you're going to find yourself in a position where you work with people who either aren't interested or aren't gelling with you, or my personal favorite, are in completely different team and are like, oh, well, I don't have to listen to you, so I won't. And it's all about, for me, getting to know people on that human level, recognize that people have various motivators. Some people don't want to get involved because they're in the wrong role. Some people don't want to get involved because there's other things going on in their life that we're not aware of. And sometimes some people are just like, I'm too busy. There could be so many reasons, but it's trying to appeal to their better nature. And something that I always say to my team, or anyone I work with, is always think about what motivates them. So I would probably say to you something, if, say, for example, we had a big project and it was the three of us, I would probably say something completely different to you, Becky, to get you to do what I need you to do, as I would you, Elliot. And sometimes it can be like, do you know what, if you do this, Becky, you're going to be really well regarded by the client, and you'd be like, okay, I'm going to do it. You're twisting my arm. Whereas you, Elliot, might be like, this is going to be amazing for your career. If you can just follow me and trust me, it's going to be amazing. I know it's going to be tough, but we will get you to the other side. That for me is it. It's like understanding everyone's individual motivation and kind of using it to your advantage to get them to follow the journey with you.
Yeah. Psychology comes up a lot in these conversations,
doesn't it?
And it is, when it comes to management and leader, more importantly, probably leadership, it is understanding people, isn't it? And what 100%. Makes them tick and what makes you tick? Because I guess it's a busy job, it sounds like you must have. How do you look after yourself? How do you make sure you're ready to show up as a leader?
You've got to know your flaws and your stop gaps. So for me, I am best when I am leading from the front. I love doing presentations. I love facilitating and workshopping. But I really clam up in really long meetings, or I really get frustrated when there are bottlenecking. And what I mean by that is when I've got a really amazing idea and I just need someone to say yes. And I get really impulsive and frustrated when that doesn't happen. And I think it's a case of knowing when to slow down and when to stop and when to take care. So I think it's acknowledging why things are happening that are not going your way, or why things are happening that are making you stressed.
Yeah.
So when it's not going your way, it might be someone else is busy, they're waiting for a decision on someone else. So that's when you have to sort of take yourself aside and go, no, I'm not going to damage my mental health worrying about things that I can't control. And then when it comes to actually just looking after yourself, because careers, and at any age, by the way, I think I'm less stressed now in my current role than when I was a marketing coordinator at 22. And it's all about knowing when to say no, whether it's to someone else or to yourself. And I'm the ultimate people pleaser, especially at 22. I'd go, yeah, I'll do all the events. I'll do all of the planning. I'll do the sales as well. And it's actually knowing when to go, sorry, I'm at capacity and I need to go home. And I think that having the power of saying no, and that's to anyone, by the way. I've stood toe-to-toe with a sales director, quaking in my boots, going, sorry, I'm going home. And luckily she appreciated it, she respected it. But yeah, it's knowing when to draw the line and when to go, actually, I need a bit of me time, or I just need to, I'll be fresher tomorrow if I go today.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it is the context around that, isn't it? It's not just no when I walk out the door. It's no, but this is the plan. We're still going to deliver on this, or it's still going to be possible. Or I'm saying no because none of us are going to be happy with the output if we carry on doing it as we're doing it now. 100%. We need to go take stock of what's happened and go and make a better decision in the future. Because often in marketing, unless there's something actually launching or there's actually an event, they're normally self-imposed deadlines. I often say it to my team. It's like, who said it had to be done by Friday? And they're like, oh, well, so-and-so said Friday would be nice. Friday would be nice. That doesn't mean we have to be done by Friday. Yeah. So if we want the best possible output, let's make it Tuesday and let's have a conversation about that. And I think, that kind of management of expectations and having those conversations and being willing to be open to that is really important.
I think that's it. It's having those boundaries especially with your colleagues. And I say this having great relationships with pretty much every salesperson I worked with. But if you're a marketer, the first thing you learn is sales want everything yesterday.
They're always last minute, aren't they?
Yeah, always I thought about this Thursday, but I'm telling you today and it's Monday and I need it tonight.
Why didn't you tell me Thursday?
That's it. Tell you what, though, now I'm laughing and joking. All of my sales friends and ex-colleagues and current colleagues are going to be absolutely coming for me.
Do you know, I'm a salesperson at heart as well, though. And I think most are at one with that. They're like, I do that. I'm sorry about that. And I probably won't change.
Yeah, that's it. But I think that's it. With what I've learned being a marketer, working with sales teams and sometimes in them, is that the deadline in a salesperson's mind is completely off from the marketer, because the salesperson is like, how hard is it to create a poster? And the marketer's like, well, I've got to go through design, and then I've got to go through review, and then someone's got to add copy to it. It's like the perceived perception of what is a deadline is different for everyone. But again, it comes to that psychology of knowing people and going, I know you want this yesterday, but how about this? And what I often will do is go, right, if we do it properly and you get this, you will have this added benefit. And I think sometimes that's a good way of like reminding yourself that it's okay to say no, but it's easier to say no if you have like a case against why you're saying no.
Yeah. And a plan, I think, yeah. Isn't it? Because people, we don't like ambiguity. We don't like not knowing what's going on. So whenever you need to say something, it's like, well, no, but here's the plan. And then it all feels a bit better and they can buy into that, can't they?
100%, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Best day at work ever, what stands out?
Do you know what? There's been some really good ones. And I think a lot of them, so I think there's two so far. One of them was possibly the most bougie day I've ever had at work. So I went to Dubai because we were hosting a sort of like marketing incentive trip. But obviously, as a marketer, you have to qualify it in or out. Is it a nice place to be? Is it a good hotel? All of those fun things. I spent 4 days in Dubai going on various different experiences to pick out which ones we wanted to offer as part of this incentive. And on this particular day, I started the day with the most glamorous brunch I have ever been to, and it was in the Palm. That was insane. And then went out on a U-boat all around the Palm again, and then we went to the Mall of Dubai and had like tasting sessions of food and all of this crazy
stuff. Positively awful, Carl. Yeah. I don't know how you got like, through this.
And like me and my colleague at the time, we were like 25 and I think 26. We were just like, this is insane.
You're like, have we been paid for this? I need to pinch myself. This can't be real.
That's it. And, you know, we had this amazing experience. Went out for the most divine dinner that I still think about. And and then went back to our hotel that was on the Palm. And because it wasn't too late, we could go out and watch the sunset on the beach. And I was like, sorry, am I actually being paid to do this? So that was a real good one. And then I think another one was a conference that I was running. The conference, I wasn't actually supposed to be running it. My then manager was basically taken out of our country. So we're a big multinational. So we're in the UK. And they're like, nope, we need you in Switzerland. So my boss gets taken out. There's no replacement for a couple of weeks. And I'm thinking, there's an event that needs to be run here. Cue me spending the next 6 months stressed out of my mind, having no experience of running events at the scale, having to figure out budget sheets. And then the event finally happened. I was in Brighton, right over the pier. And we had, I think, 600 delegates coming, so 600 people coming. And we were launching this product and we were doing awards. And there was so much room for error. And it all went off without a hit. Like, wow. Nothing went wrong. And then I just so distinctly remember getting to the end of the day and which was all, I had actually taken my shoes off by this point. And then someone tapped me on the shoulder and went, you're probably going to want to put these back on, because feet were just aching from running up and down. We were at this gala dinner and wearing this big posh frock. And I'm thinking, right, I can finally relax. Then my name gets called out and I'm pulled up on stage and my area managers just spring out a big bunch of flowers and a bottle of champagne. And it was just this like, oh no, I've actually done this well.
Yeah.
And looking out onto all these people, and these are people that I've known and worked with for like the last 18 months, and just had this like standing ovation. And it sounds so cheesy, but it was such a turning point in my career. I was like, okay, if I can do that, I can do anything.
I love that.
And it was just fantastic.
Oh, I love that. On the flip side, like, okay, is there a day at work that you're like, oh, it just all went wrong?
Yes.
And were there some lessons from it?
I tell you what, one of the worst days, not just of work, of probably my life.
Wow.
It was events tend to be quite stressful and highly, highly emotional. And I was in London, so it was London Bridge, just down the road. And again, it was conference, but this time we're launching like this super secret product. Couldn't tell anyone about it. And it was the night before, and something had happened where basically all of our slides went. We had like 2 days worth of slides and they had all just been lost. So I'm not ashamed to say, I just went to the toilet and just cried, just cried my eyes out. And then luckily one of my colleagues came in and was just like, should we just hug it out? And we're going to go out there. We're going to, you know, get a couple of drinks and we're just going to just redo them. This was at 6 p.m. in the middle of dinner. I had to leave everyone in dinner. And we stayed up until 4 o'clock in the morning recreating these slides. And then the next day, I basically had to be presenting all day with the biggest bags under my eyes and just looking very unrested. And it was so stressful and it was just awful because it was like, it was just out of everyone's control. Yeah. There's no one to blame. It just happened. It was a software malfunction that just completely cleaned the hard drive. And the biggest lesson I learned from that is back everything up.
Yeah.
Get copies, put it on USB drives if you need to. Just always, always, always back your stuff up. Yeah. Because I'm telling you what, that was a harrowing experience.
Oh, I can imagine. I suppose it's easier as well now when, like, if you do stuff on Google Slides, it's yeah. just saving to the cloud all the time. You can jump back to your version from 2 hours ago. You can, but yeah, I have stories like that. Not as bad, I don't think, because yeah. with an event, because events are really stressful, aren't they?
Yeah, there's so many spinning parts and they're so rewarding when they go well, but there's so much that can go wrong. And, yeah. and I'm sure you've experienced it as well. And it, when that thing goes wrong, you're just like, please.
Like, and you try and have contingency for everything, but you can never have contingency for everything. Yeah. These things just crop up and you're like, okay, cool. But it forces you to be able to think on your feet and to come up with a plan. Because also you have to remember when you've got people visiting an event or whatever it is you're doing, if we're working with humans, which we normally are, we're all pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
And actually people do understand that things go wrong. And actually the more you can be human about stuff, and yes, it's much nicer if it all goes smoothly, but people don't mind when something goes wrong. Yeah, as long as they're kind of told about it, their expectations are managed as to what's going to happen next. And sometimes actually that helps you grow more, being able to face up to things that have happened and having those slightly awkward, difficult conversations.
Sometimes just being able to be honest and go, this is what happened. And in fact, being wedding coordinator taught me this, possibly one of the most like gut-wrenchingly embarrassing moments of my career. So I did wedding coordinating, but also did like parties. So this one party, and they're like, we're going to do a hog roast. And I was like, fabulous. And I was thinking, right, because it's on our menu, just tell the chef, they'll turn up to their party, there'll be a hog, fabulous. That was not the case. So this is my first job out of uni. I was about 2 months in. The party was like a couple of weeks later, and the morning afterwards, I get this very strongly worded email saying, and the title was, "Where was the hog?" And long story short, I did not know that you had to order someone external to come in and do the actual hog roast. So this party, for the whole meal, the whole evening, all they had was bread buns and apple sauce and just an array of salads. And I was just like, oh no, oh no. And they said, like, we're going to come in today and we need to sort this out. And I kid you not, I just like, just stood there like speechless. And I was like, oh, what am I gonna? I'd like, the words were just not coming out. And my, luckily my sales manager at the time was like, we're going to do this together. You're going to come, you're going to learn. And she sat there flawlessly. I was just like, I understand. Oh, it must have been awful. It was a real error on our part. And that crisis communication and just while I just sat there like just, you know, trying to hold back the tears and the stress while in face of a customer who was like, no, I want all of the money back. And she managed to talk them down. She offered them sort of free stays and free meal, which meant the company didn't lose out, but the customer was happy. And then we didn't get a really horrible review afterwards on TripAdvisor. And it was one of those where it was like such a good learning experience. And you often don't realise how often you're going to get them in your beginning of your career.
Yeah. And I think the honesty in those moments that I've cried in front of a client before in an awkward situation. But do you know what? Like, and it wasn't intentional. I just was so upset with what was going on. But actually it built a relationship with that client because I think they really... Because I think sometimes when something goes wrong, people think, oh, you just don't care. And there was obviously something more important than us or whatever. When actually, when you really do care and just something has gone wrong, if they can see how much that means, it builds something where they go, okay, do you know what? I am going to give you another shot because I get this. Like, mistakes happen, things go wrong. Yeah. Whereas if you look, sit there and look a bit cocky and you're like, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, trying to...
Yeah, things happen.
That's it. One of my biggest recommendations to any young person is never, ever hide the truth.
Yeah.
If you've made a mistake, people will always respect you more if you go cap in hand and you go, this happened, this is why it happened, here's what I learned from it, please help me fix it. We'll always Well, yeah. Better off than going, no, that definitely didn't happen and it definitely wasn't me.
Yeah. And pick up the phone for that or go and talk in person for that. 100%. Like, never do that on an email. Always try and talk to someone because they'll get more from you in that. Like, whereas an email, you can't read the emotion, can you? You can't see the tears in the corner of the eye or anything. Whereas in person, they can see and you can have that more emotional connection and you can go, okay, we can fix this. We've got a plan.
Yeah. It comes back to being human as well. Like, nothing says, I'm sorry, like turning up quivering and on the verge of a breakdown. Like, and you know what? And I would say as well, there's this perception that the more senior you get, the less mistakes you make. I often have to go to my like MD or my sales team and go, something's late or something's not arrived or this and this and this. And as long as you understand why and you can own up to it and you can assure them it's probably not going to happen again, it's all good. But yeah, mistakes happen throughout your career. It's just knowing how to handle them is really important. And it all stems in honesty.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, even just taking ownership over like what you've done and accepting that and moving on and then developing from that. Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah.
You normally will never make that mistake again.
For all the latest marketing and brand news, follow The Drum Mag on Instagram.
Funny one we had back in the day, we were doing email marketing for a client and the client was a mailing house. So they were doing printed mailers, etc. And they were really strong on personalization, which at the time was quite a big thing, being able to print individual things with different names on them in the lovely design. And we had this email campaign going out for them all about personalization. And my colleague only went and messed up the personalization. So it went out to like 10,000 people saying dear name instead of dear Coral. But we literally, again, you rally, don't you? So the minute we realized it happened, we were like, oh no. Right. What, firstly, can we get it back? No, it's gone. It's very much gone. It's in those people's inboxes. But then we came up with a plan. We were like, do you know what? We could make a bit of a joke of this and like make out it was intentional. So we stayed up all night. We told the client what we were going to do. We stayed up all night building out a guide to personalization. And we basically sent this email saying, amazing. I'm guessing you thought we'd made a mistake there. Well, we just wanted to really make the point of how important personalization is and how it makes you feel. Now you can download our guide to personalization. And literally to the clients, it looked like nothing had ever gone wrong. But to us, well, I mean, we'd lost the night and I'd grown some grey hairs and God knows what.
Yeah, but there's so much problem solving in mistakes as well. Like I'm a really real firm believer that you learn so much more from what you've done wrong than what you've done right.
Yeah.
And it's that creative problem solving that comes out when you really have messed up is some of the best work I've ever done when I've gone, well, that flopped or oh no, that was wrong. Yeah. Like, you know, I've had so many newsletter mistakes. Like,
email's honestly, the worst, isn't
email,
it?
Email, I don't know how people do it for a living because it is just so the stress. Because basically, with email marketing, you send something and it can't come back. It's not like I've sent something wrong to the printers or it went on socials and I could just delete it. Like, it's gone.
Yeah, it's on all those people's phones, on all those desktops, it's there.
When I was working in the food industry, it wasn't me, thankfully, one of my non-mistakes, but a colleague of mine, digital manager, was sending out a newsletter, so food-based newsletter, and it was all about seasonal veg, and this one happened to be about beetroot, and that he just wrote down, it's like a space saver, I love beetroot, and sent that to 50,000 people. And it was just like, I just really remember the panic and the stress on everyone's faces and just being like, oh no.
It's the moment your stomach drops, isn't it? Like you feel it. You're like, oh, it's like gut-wrenching.
But they absolutely saved the day. I think the next newsletter, so they quickly typed out the newsletter. And then it was like, hey, do you also love beetroot? So they kind of like saved it. But yeah, the email and newsletter are the stuff of nightmares.
So
respect to anybody who does that for a living.
100%, 100%.
Yeah, and you also got to deal with like some people just won't message you back. They won't get back to you. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly. Knowing if people are engaging and whatnot, that's like the secret science of marketing.
Yeah. Well, it's even harder now because people lurk, don't they?
Yeah.
Like on social, you'll get someone pop out of nowhere that's never engaged in anything and you had no idea your content was reaching them. And that's then they suddenly pop up and they're like, oh, I'd like to buy from you guys. And you're like, well, that's wonderful news, but where have you come from? And they've just been lurking in the dark shadows somewhere watching. And it's like, cool, but I wish you'd interacted because I would have got some more feeling from you. And known that that thing was working.
So many people these days don't connect on LinkedIn, for an example. They will follow And because I do this thing called the Marketing Mentor, it's a newsletter, I get so many follow requests that my following has gone like crazy. It's sort of like tripled over the last couple of months. But my connections are like stagnant. And it is that lurker thing of like, I want to see what you produce, but I don't really want to engage with it. I don't want you to bombard me. And I definitely don't want you to sell to me.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting how consumer behavior changes. But that's one of the really nice, fun things about marketing is it rarely stays the same. Yeah. So the challenge is always different. And there's always something like a nut for you to crack somewhere.
Yeah. And tell us about this newsletter. Is that something that our audience might want to follow you on?
Yeah.
Well, or connect with you.
Yeah, definitely. So it's a really random one. So long story short, I put out a post just before Christmas saying, I'm free to mentor young marketers, anybody interested. This was on the Friday night, Saturday morning. Nobody responded. I thought, oh, no, nobody's interested, fine. Come Tuesday morning, when I next logged into LinkedIn, I had 105 notifications. I had, I think something ridiculous, like 47 requests to connect. I had like 30 in-mail requests. And I was like, oh, this is crazy. And I hate letting people down. And I hate the knowledge that there's loads of marketers and young people out there who are desperate to get into marketing and have no idea what to do, where to start. So I started the newsletter called The Marketing Mentor. You can find it on Substack. It's also on my LinkedIn. And I basically take one of the broader subjects that my mentees come out with, like, should I be a specialist or a generalist? Or how do I navigate starting my marketing career? Do I need a portfolio? And if I do, what should be in it? All of those big questions that it seems like there's like this little book of marketing,
yep,
that like only marketers know. Just kind of distill it into a newsletter, and I try and make them fun and engaging and make it interesting. But fundamentally, it's just to help anybody that's interested start or thrive in a marketing career.
Love that. I think you're going to have a few new followers. Yeah. We will link that in the show notes. Perfect. So that people, yeah, can come and get involved. That's brilliant. Yeah. And what was your motivation just wanting to give back and help young people?
Something that I firmly believe in is you should always pay it forwards. In my career, so many opportunities have come through mentoring or from amazing managers or just from amazing colleagues. And I think if you could distill that, even if once a month for half an hour, just speak to someone who needs help in marketing or is a young person struggling to get in it or whatever it is, I think I encourage other marketers to do it. I think it's so rewarding as well. But for me, it was just, I am who I am and I'm have seen the successes that I've seen because of the support I've had from other people. So I wanted to pay that forward for younger marketers and any folk that felt they needed it.
Love that. Yeah. I love that. Any more questions, Elliot?
Yeah, I've got one last question. What would you like to say to your younger self if you could, the advice you have now?
Oh, that's a good one. That is a good one. I think it would probably be slow down. I was very, very driven and I still am. I'm still really ambitious, still really driven. But it feels like when you're like 16, 17, 18, everyone is putting so much pressure on you to be everything and know where you want to go and what you want to study and what you want for a career. So I would like rattle through ideas. But actually, when you slow down and go, okay, well, what do I enjoy? What do I love? That takes you through 3 years. So it gets you from 16, 17, 18 and takes you into like 21, for example. So whether you go in apprenticeship or university. And then after university, my pressure sensor just wrapped up again. And it was like, I need to figure everything out. I need to decide what I want to do. Do I want to work in events? Do I want to work in publishing? And all of these other crazy ideas. And actually, it's when I really slowed down and just allowed myself to experience the working world that it all kind of unraveled towards me. And then slowing down in terms of not wanting to go for the next promotion straight away and not trying to get to director at like 25 meant that when I did finally get there, because I'd slowed down in my like early 20s, so much experience I could bring to the table and then took so much pressure off myself. There was nothing worse than racing through your career and then getting somewhere where you have not enough experience, not enough knowledge, but the title that you have to deliver. So I think slowing down is really important. Just allowing yourself to experience the opportunities in front of you rather than chasing the next one, I think, is what I would probably tell myself.
That's some brilliant advice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really good. Yeah. Is there anything you haven't shared that you feel like, oh, I was really hoping to get this little bit of wisdom out?
Do you know what it is? I think it is, it kind of probably ties into like that sort of like mental health angle of like slowing down and not putting so much pressure on yourself. But genuinely, if you're thinking about a career in marketing, I cannot stress this to you enough, it is one of the hardest industries to get into. Do not let that beat you down. it is so rewarding. And even if the first opportunity isn't your dream opportunity, the next one might be, or the one after that, or you might start this amazing process like I did and actually find that what you're dreaming of isn't actually what you enjoy, and what you enjoy is nestled somewhere in the in between. So, for example, I really wanted to work for travel brands, whereas now I just want to work for small brands that have big ideas and allow me to strategize and be creative. So, yeah, just like, just get into marketing any way you can. And just allow yourself to absorb all the learnings, and the learnings will take you to where you need to be.
Love that. I absolutely love that. And we can see that you've really taken that on in your career. Yeah. I keep thinking back, I can imagine Coral in that yeah. farmer job, feeling a bit like, yeah. oh, I'm just putting things in spreadsheets and moving stuff yeah. around. But you learned so much from that to be able to take you to where you are now. And wow, yeah. I love it. Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Coral. You've been fabulous. We will make sure we link yeah. you in the show notes awesome. So everyone can come and follow you, join the newsletter, yeah. etc. And thank you so much, Elliot. It's been a fabulous yeah, conversation.
Yeah. yeah, thank you both. This has been so fun. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Good. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Behind the Future.
That concludes another brilliant episode of Behind the Future. Thank you so much for listening. You can listen back to other episodes on YouTube or your podcast platform of choice. Make sure you hit the subscribe button, as that will help us to grow this podcast, ensuring we can get the best guests on here for you to learn from. You can also follow us on socials, linked in the show notes for exclusive content. See you on the next episode.